Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is another big week. This is episode 4 with Ron English covering toys. We don't cover every toy, but we do cover some big ones and talk through what his next steps are, what his messaging was, and where he's headed. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It's an easy way to help us. It's free for you. It's helpful for us. You can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. And you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/ToysOnTap. That's where you'll get new episodes, nitty gritty. We are going to get all those video interviews up. We are working on it. It has taken a long time, but we are doing it. Don't you worry. Don't you fret. And every Patreon supporter will get a Frank Sifubi piece, which I'm really excited for because we love our patrons. So let's get back into this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are on episode 4, which is kind of the toy world of Ron English, which we're really excited for. Ron, please introduce yourself like we've done on the other episodes. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Ron English. I'm a fine artist and I also make art toys.
Nice. We've kind of covered a lot of stuff. The last episode was more or less about galleries and moving into that space. And so we're approaching something that is less gallery oriented, more shelf collectible oriented and that type of stuff. So take us back to, I know that everything in timelines kind of gets murky and a little blurry around. When did we start setting our eyes on toys and that being something that you wanted to produce or start working with?
You know, I don't remember the date, but I think the very first one I did, it was either MC or it was Ronnie Rabbit. They were kind of started at the same time. And I also started one, Kid Robot had just started, and they did their first Dunny series, and they had Tristan Eaton designed the Dunnies. And I did one with three tits, so they just keep, we can't put this out. So they just put that out. But I had already designed it, and it was weird because I didn't really know how to design a toy yet. I went out to Brooklyn and some guy helped me. But so the first two would have been MC Supersized and Ronnie Rabbit. And Ronnie Rabbit was kind of not a part of the toy scene. It was more like a mass produced thing, like a cool, like Hot Topic kind of item.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think they did an exclusive with Tower Records, and that was Dark Horse. So they had been doing notebooks and different things with artists, and mostly the Pop Surrealists, if I remember correctly. And so that was kind of a higher end item. And I think the reason that they took it is because I already had done the sculpt, so it saved some money. So
yeah,
kind of a practical thing because they're a business, you know. You know, we're artists and we're impractical, but you know, they're actually
yeah.
So that was interesting. It's hard for me to say which one came out, but I think in the Sifubi, whatever the design or art thing, that the first one was MC Supersized with Lev put it out, Lev of Toy Tokyo,
who yeah.
dealt in toys, but had never, I think he might have worked on the Scene toy. So maybe he had done one toy, but so maybe this was the second or his first, I can't remember.
Yeah. Your work speaks to kind of clashing with society a lot, or clashing with things that honestly we can say we worship in society, with fast food or politics or whatever. And so tell me about the bringing to life of MC Supersize. Like, there's got to be messages. There's messages in all of your work. So tell me about that toy specifically.
Well, before the toys, I did billboards. So I a lot of the billboards were like, I just thought, well, you know, they spend billions of dollars on advertising, and there's a, you know, that's funded, but it's only really one side of the story. You know, Coke has other attributes besides, you know, making you the most joyous person on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Maybe it makes you fart. Maybe it makes you fat. I don't know, but they don't promote those aspects of it. So I took it as my mission to kind of go on and illegally take over billboards and tell the other side of the story. So when I was doing when I was messing, I started messing with McDonald's probably right off the bat, way back in the early 80s. But at some point they came, it was weird. They hired some company for like $2 million, and I don't know, what do you know, those companies that come in and try to figure out what's wrong, like Booz Allen Hamilton or whatever.
Consulting or whatever, yeah.
No, but they just want to figure out, like, how can we, well, I think their main question to the company was, why aren't we reaching the black population? Which seems strange now, because I think they got to everybody eventually, but the answer they really came up with after some expensive studies and taking a couple $1 million was, you know, black culture is not exactly the same as white culture. And also, like, do you have black people in your ads? You know, because if I want you to be into my product and be you know, because at that point, a product isn't just food. It's a lifestyle. It's an idea, you know. And if you're not including me in that idea, like, fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, it was a simple thing. But, you know, it's like, don't just show a bunch of white people and wonder why black people don't buy it. That's fucked up. And also, but it was also interesting to me because they said adopt some of the culture. But yeah, they didn't. It didn't feel like that they brought people from the culture into, like, you know, they brought Harvard white kids in and they said, yeah, make it more hip-hop-y or whatever. And a culture that they really weren't the pioneers of. And they made a lot of, you know, it seemed blundery the way they kind of went at it. And so then I had made the character MC Supersize. So he was like a rapper and he had like all the gold chains and he really ate the fucking food. That's why he was fat. So, and I, you know, the way I disseminated, you know, my art back then was through illegal billboards. So I started putting him on illegal billboards. And then Morgan Spurlock, who did Supersize Me, I did one on his block and he was actually working on that movie. So bada bing, bada boom, I'm in the movie. And so that's how that all started. And I think because the movie had kind of supported the character, love of Toy Tokyo, who's a, you know, he's a businessman, so he has to kind of almost see it working before he can do something. He can't really take that kind of risk, because right now he can take every toy that's made and then resell it. He's good. He's got the business model. It's dumber to make the toy, you know. But he just thought that was such a hit that we made that toy. And just for like deeper dive stuff, my first renditions of MC Supersize that I did for the toy where he was very scary and very obese. And Lev said, no, you gotta make him cuter on. So yeah, I kind of cutened him up a bit. And I guess we hit the sweet spot. No pun intended.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
Which has inspired so much. Like, you've done that, and I've seen smaller versions that have come out through Dove. You just had a partnership with Shoes, with Bolairs, which I got a pair and I can't wait to see them. There's all kinds of cool things that have come from this. And then you have this kind of seems like it unlocks the next couple.
Yeah.
So you have Fat Tony, which comes out.
Well, I did a couple others. Like, I did one with Strange Co. and it was Kathy Calgro, who's actually my favorite character. But I'd already broken like one taboo. But I think I did okay with MC because he was so popular. But the audience for these toys was very small back then, and they were kind of nerdy, and I don't think they wanted anything sexual in it. They hadn't crossed that Rubicon yet. So I don't know if anybody ever got into Kathy Cowgirl. I think she kind of freaks everybody out. But they produced that, and they didn't do that well, and we ended up buying the whole or a big large part of the stock from them. And it took us about 5 years to sell through everything. And that was a resin. We did resin to get a little more detail.
But
yeah, we're still early in the game at that point. And I did some other toys. But the first one I did with my company, which is called Popaganda, we decided, well, let's self-produce one toy. And so that was Fat Tony, and he like blew up and, you know, got in Time and NPR, and I don't know, he got a lot of love. And but the weird thing, the difference between MC and Fat Tony was Lev was like, I'm not going to promote this, because he was really scared of getting sued by McDonald's. So he kind of sold it under the table. He knew the scene.
Yeah.
He could have made the national news with that toy, but you know, he was just trying to be low key with it. He didn't want to get a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And I was like, don't worry about it. You know, I mean, first, you know, let him sue me. I don't care. But yeah, so he was a little more cautious and we were a little less cautious. But I remember we were moving to upstate, and sometimes I get these huge press slams, like, right, I'm in the middle of a move. You know, said all the press is calling me, and then go, he just said no comment. It's like, I said no comment because I'm holding a giant box trying to load it into a truck. I had the best day. You know, another time I remember it was like an aside. It's like, you know, the guy fucked with me and said, well, you know, he created all this controversy and then he wouldn't talk about it. It's like, I shouldn't even pick up the phone. I was driving to the airport to get my mom. It's like that. I told you I'd talk to you later, but you were on the deadline, you know, but I don't know. I get annoyed by that stuff sometimes, but yeah, Tony blew up, and I think we ran through like 7,000 the first couple of weeks. So.
Holy crap. That is.
We were trying to think, okay, now if we're going to produce this ourselves, how are we going to play the game? So what we did is we made one that was just an open edition. Because I thought, you know, a lot of people like, they don't understand this culture, but they think, yeah, I want that, you know, but I don't really, I'm not trying to play this game. I don't understand what you guys are doing, but I like that, you know. So we thought we'd have one that we could just unlimitedly make unlimited amounts of. And then the other ones, we did only 100 of each colorway. So they had value for the toy collectors.
Yeah. Which is insane. It's still pretty early on when you're getting these things done. So Lev produces MC Supersize. When you do this one yourself, are you now just trying to find factories? Are you pushing this out to other people to make it happen?
Well, I was getting like some indie guys, and then I would go to Comic-Con, and it was always Mindstyle. I don't know if you know that company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like everybody had a booth, and maybe somebody had two booths, and he had like 20 booths. You know, it's just like, and huge sculptures, and they were just balls out doing it, you know. And I decided I got to be with that guy. I got to do whatever the fuck it takes to get with that guy, you know.
Yeah.
And kind of on the other end of it, the guy that ran the company, MD Young, he liked me, like Futura. He goes, look, I like, they call you the godfather of street art. I want the godfather. And they call Futura the godfather of graffiti. You know, so I want these people that their own peers recognizes them in a certain way, or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he produced, you know, a lot of music and stuff. And so he'd always like, yeah, you know, I won't deal in with anybody till they got 8 Grammys. I don't care if I like them or not. You know, if I love them and I just, you know, I won't do it because I'm a businessman and I, you know, it's like he's playing Moneyball, you know.
Yeah.
He knows, look, and also like later, you know, I mean, I was very desperate to be with him, and we got together, and we actually started doing these mini tours of China where we do like a small pop-up, but mostly we would just go talk to the local press and meet everybody and just, you know, ingratiate me to everybody. And it was a lot of work, you know, getting on the train, going to another city and then meeting with people. And I mean, we busted ass for a few years just to build up the brand before it kind of really blew up there.
Yeah.
But so, you know, later I kind of was thinking, what was it about? Well, I mean, he liked the idea that I was a godfather, but also it sort of occurred to me, it's like looking at things from his perspective. If you took all the artists back then, who would you have picked to put in that position? You know, who has a lot of characters and who really is would just work? You know, he'll travel everywhere. Like I'll do 10 events a day if I have to, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'll sign for 6 hours. And then go be in your movie or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think I made a lot of sense to him too. So we got along really well. And we did, the tours got bigger and bigger and bigger till like they were like Pink Floyd concerts. And then, you know, I don't know. He made a huge fortune. I think he did a bunch of movies. He did everything he wanted to do. And so most recently he's decided to retire. I think we're going to have one big, big, big show, maybe like in the Philippines, and that'll be the very last one.
Yeah. So, I mean, these.
I don't know. Yeah. So the biggest promoter in this industry was behind me. So I have to kind of reinvent myself. So now I have to find other partners or just figure out how I, you know.
Yeah.
Because also I didn't do, I turned down stuff constantly because it was kind of like, well, I did stuff with Garage Works because I sort of, I got in with them right away too. So I had, they were like my family at that point, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, look, I will get rid of all these other people and unmess the whole situation, but I'm not going to get rid of Garage Works or, you know, because we were like, so we kind of decided that, well, they would be part of the family and that we would kind of roll. So anyway, I'm in a weird position. I guess that's a pretty damn good run, but yeah, now I have to figure out now who I'm working with or what I'm going to do next. So,
yeah. I mean, and what's interesting is your toys seem to spur on the next one. So Fat Tony then spurs on a fat version of so many other mascots.
Yeah. I thought, well, there's the right amount of, well, the most famous.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
For custom action figures,
DKE
serial characters. There's like 13 of them. So that means I can make the Last Supper. So that's why I already knew I wanted to make the Last Supper. That's why Tony's pointing. He's like Judas. So
yeah.
Anyway, but then after that, and it was kind of interesting because I knew that Tony was going to be the biggest seller. You know, I knew that Captain Cornstarch would probably be number two. That. As you got to Quisp was going to be a really hard sell because, I'm sorry, do you know who Quisp is?
I do not know who Quisp is.
Okay, see what I mean? So we were going to bust balls on fucking Tony, but Quisp, people don't know who that is. That he was my favorite serial character when I was a kid, and he's an alien, and obviously, you know, I like aliens.
Yeah.
And a little twirly thing on his head. And
oh, I think I have seen him before.
So cute. It's kind of weird. Because I know I'm going to have to make some that aren't going to sell that well.
Yeah.
But it's obsessed with, I really wanted it to be the Last Supper, you know? So, yeah, I could have just went for the five that I knew would sell like crazy and ignored the rest or.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it is crazy the, because each one, so does your messaging change?
Sure. Yeah.
Does your messaging change? Over the course of time as you produce these. So with Fat Tony, you have a certain message that's going out. And then does it change as you produce that? Or is that still just going to be a running theme through all those serial creatures and all that?
Oh, yeah. That's all one piece.
Okay. Okay. And then.
So the problem was that it took 10 years. I couldn't let go of the ball for 10 years, you know, and a lot of things changed. But I'm glad we got it all done before, like, the trade wars and all the stuff that's happening now, because then it would be very hard to create the last one in this environment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
we are working on the Pooh Fairy with Josh and Miranda, but it's a clear one, and it's the skeletons on the inside. But, I mean, I did Lady Lips with them, and from the time we did the original sculpt to the time they put it out, it was 5 years, so... They're like, you know, I loved MD because, like, I remember once he just kind of go, like, how long does it take to make a toy? It's like, yeah, it makes 8 months to a year. And it's like, okay, so he hands me a napkin and goes, draw something. You know, so I drew the fat Statue of Liberty, and he had it done in 2 months. And that's with, you know, 6-foot versions and later, like, a 4-story version. And
yeah.
So, but he owned the factory. It was his factory, so he could push things to the head. But, you know, it's just like, I try just not to think about it, but it's like, fuck. You know, those guys are so slow. It's just not, it makes it not fun. You know, because you kind of get energy level to do something, and 5 years is just, you're not even interested in it by the time it comes out, you know?
Yeah, 5 years is a timeline I don't ever want to participate in. I think I've gotten our timeline down as we work with factories and stuff. It's down, I don't know, probably like 6 months. And then that's with product in hand, depending on what it is. If it's soft vinyl, it's in hand. With resin. Yeah, the
way is you have to keep your mouth shut about stuff for a really long time.
Yeah.
You can't hold up. Oh, look, because you have maybe a proto already, or, you know, you're excited. And you kind of lose that excitement sometimes by the time it's out. But, you know, I'm a little kid, so.
Yeah.
I think patient.
Let's jump forward.
More patient now, so yeah.
Let's jump forward a little bit. Tell me about Temper Tot, because that not only was that a smaller figure, but it also then became I can't remember the organization that put the giant statue one in.
Yeah, that was mine.
Yeah. Mine. So. Statues, yeah. So tell me about Temper Tot in like. Because that kind of looks like it starts to pivot a little bit away from the other toys in which the messaging is very out there and you can see it. So tell me the thoughts behind Temper Tot and how that started getting developed.
Yeah, he's an older character that I used. I came up with him and my son was an actual Temper Tot. Yeah, but it was just a lot of it. It's just like a personal thing to me and I'm having experience in. So I always figured, well, you know, if I don't know, it's like you have kids, right? We talked about that, right?
I don't have any kids, no.
Kids, yeah, like people with kids, it's like if I said to you, it's like, yeah, you know, sometimes I think I'm gonna throw my kid out the window. You think, oh my God, oh shit, I should report it to the authorities. if somebody actually has like a screaming 2-year-old that won't stop or whatever, and then they're like. Oh yes, we've all had that thought.
It's okay. Yeah,
you didn't throw him out, right?
Okay. Yeah,
but it was just like being terrorized, and he kind of puffed his chest out and walked around like a little man, and you know they're just gaining control over everything, and it's a weird experience for them, I suppose. But it was made for parents, and it was about having this little guy that's two foot tall, and you're scared shitless of him, you know. He can wreak havoc. And then it kind of became another thing because little children liked him because it showed them being the one in power.
Yeah. You know?
And I'd forgotten about, even though I pretend like I'm like the world's oldest kid, you know, I had kind of forgotten about a lot of aspects of being a kid, or especially that aspect. Yeah, having kids, it's like, it's interesting because I think it kind of coincided with the toy thing with me because, you know, instead of standing up and being 6 foot tall and having a 6 foot perspective, now I'm laying on the floor with the kids and playing with the blocks and building stuff. And I'm seeing the fantastical world, like the imaginary half of what you're actually doing when you're playing. And I got returned to that. And so it made me want to make toys more.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean.
So Temper Tot is, you know, the id and the little terror from the point of view of the parents. And then, it's an empowering image for little children.
Yeah. And so you've worked with, at this point, you've worked with some resin and some soft vinyl at this point or no? Yes. Soft vinyl.
Yeah.
And so then when I start like really seeing some of your work, it's coming out as like action figures almost from Dove. And it all comes part of this almost like Grin series. You started doing the Grin series and different characters and doing that, which, and then there's the smiley face that has the grin and all kinds of stuff. I am so fascinated by that. I don't even know what to call, like, it's such a different take on some of the most iconic things that we've seen. Right. And I don't understand why I can't stop staring at it, but the it's like a skeleton vibe. Tell me about those characters and like you have this knack for just twisting it a little bit so it says something different. What's going on with those ones?
Well, I mean, everything's kind of weirdly subtle. I mean, the distance between our eyes, if they were just a little bit more farther apart, it would weird you the fuck out. Or
yeah.
makes Mousy Steve a little gum. You know, like one of my Marilyn, who I've done a million times, they had to teach her because she was very beautiful, but she smiled it too high and you could show too much gum. And so if you just went like this much farther, it would just become this terrifying image. Just that much. That's the difference, right?
Yeah.
One drop of LSD will fuck up your whole thing. You know? What the fuck? So everything's just like in this little area where just if you just go outside of it a little bit, then it feels different. Or if, you know, there's somebody smiling at you and you think, oh, I feel so good. They're smiling at me. And it's like, oh, fuck, they're still smiling at me. Then it starts getting, like, if they smile too long, it starts getting weird. So it's just playing, pushing things over the edge. And he was a good character because he was first, you know, the smile so well known, and it's public domain. So anytime I'm producing with anybody, they're not sketchy about it or anything. And so it's already known. And it's also like that you realize, you know, all this culture's kind of pushed at you with the big smile, like the MetLife has Snoopy or whatever, and that that's the facade.
Yeah.
So it's like you see just a little bit behind the facade, you know.
There's something creepy yet fun about putting that messaging on other works, right? And it's like I don't know what the actual messaging is, but if it's just the facade and then there's something different creepy coming in, it changes how I feel about certain toys because now they have a different look.
Yeah, right. And that's why brands have, you know, made people stay on book and been so dogmatic about their characters. And I think I don't know, a lot of brands had us put the grin on their character. So the culture changed. So I was kind of doing the same thing. You know, they say the definition of an idiot or a fool is somebody who does the same thing and expects different results. But that's true. You know, like when you first do something, maybe it doesn't work. And then the culture changes and then suddenly they become ready for it, you know, like Stravinsky did the Rite of Spring. And you would say, well, they had a riot when you played that, right? And he goes, yeah, they had a riot. So then you played it again. Are you a fool? And it's like, no, their brains grew. The next time they went crazy in the other direction. They cheered for it. They thought this may be the greatest piece of music of our time. And so he did the same thing, you know, repeatedly until people liked it, you know?
So, yeah.
They say you have to hear a song 7 times before you like it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think every one of those weird tropes, like lightning never strikes twice. It's like, what the fuck? Yeah, it does.
It struck 7 times for you.
No, it hits the look at the World Trade Center. It got hit like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, what is cool about them?
It's wrong, right?
What's cool about these toys is that it seems like you changed what you were doing each time. You pivoted slightly. So with MC Supersize, you had one messaging, one look. As it pivoted to Fat Tony, whole nother look, whole nother messaging. Temper Tot, drastically new look and messaging. And then you get to action figures, which is a whole nother look. Like, you keep moving. Is this a strategic thing that you're doing through your career as you're working with toys in this time period?
Well, you know, I'm a trained artist, so I was trained to be in the art world, which is, you know, another aspect of my career where everything has to be conceptual. Everything has to be like each one of your shows is like a movie. So each one tells a different story. So, you know, why would you use a certain material in your paintings? It has to be there for a reason. It has to be telling part of the story, you know. It can't be there for can't be arbitrary. So why would you use toys as a medium, you know? And like, so it's perfect. Like the cereal characters are perfect as toys. They look like the little toys, you know, when you bought the box of cereal and you wanted a little toy that came inside of it. So it's the perfect medium to have this conversation.
Yeah. As you have been producing over the years, has there been a toy that kind of went too close to the edge, or so to speak, either message-wise or copyright-wise?
I think the I did Toy Soldiers and They Were Dead, and it was a really good sculpt. And I actually used a guy was building my studio at the time, and so I dressed him up like an army, like, hey, you have to help me with this, dude. You know, I got him a machine gun. And but yeah, so you bought these soldiers, and that they had arms blown off, and they were laying on the ground, and they still had the little stands, but they weren't standing anymore.
Yeah.
That was a rough one too for people because, yeah, I don't know. I don't think people want to think about that aspect of, you know, but it's true, you know.
Yeah, I think that
that might be the one that answers your question. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what's tough is that art really changes and gives a messaging to something that is already well known in culture, and so regardless if people want to hear it or not, there was something to be said. And so was it, as you, did you produce this?
Yeah. Yeah. We, it was, but it was produced super high end in metal.
Okay.
And they came in caskets with little flag streak.
Holy moly, Ron.
Yeah. But you know, why were they, I don't know. It's like, well, first off, I grew up like in the '60s. So the toy soldiers we were given, like we played with G.I. Joes and then little toy soldiers, but they weren't, the Vietnam War was like rocking on, and you know, we all assumed that someday we would be sent to go die in it. But all the toys, they weren't Vietnam toys. They weren't Vietnam era soldiers. They were World War II soldiers. They weren't even Korean soldiers. Yeah. So they thought maybe that was a good war, but no toy company was going to, you know, put up a Vietnam toy, you know? I mean, maybe a weird thing happened to me when I was a kid is I got a Christmas present and it was a G.I. Joe. And I was really happy because, you know, I wanted a G.I. Joe because all my friends had G.I. Joes and a lot of them had scuba equipment, the little richer kids or whatever. But they fucking got me a German G.I. Joe and it was an unmarked box. Well, I mean, now it's cool, but, you know, it's like, I'm an American. I want to fight with Americans. Those are the bad guys. But I wonder if it did kind of like muck my mind up a little bit because I had to, you know, play with the toy that was the supposed bad guy. Or,
yeah. You know. You were starting your villain arc.
I feel things from a different point of view, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough one. Those
guys thought they were the bad guys.
Yeah. No one thinks they're the bad guy until they are shown they're the bad guy.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever stopped. I think they always say there's a good guy. I don't know. I don't know. This is a weird aside. Yeah, you know, if you ask most Americans, like, slavery's bad, right?
Yeah.
Indentured servitude's bad, right?
Yeah.
We're about to get it again.
Yeah.
The deal that our president is trying to make is for, and I think he just was doing this weird kick everybody out of the country thing because it got the base all riled up, or for whatever reason, not probably not a very thought through reason, but then he realized that like all of his hotels are going to lose all the employees because they're all illegal.
Yeah. You know?
And then I think the farmers actually collectively got to him and says, you know, we can't farm. We can't do this. We can't chop up meat and serve it to you because we don't have anybody to do this. You know, you're kicking all these people out of the country that do all the work. Yeah. My neighbor just, you know, he has a, he lost all of his employees. They sent ICE around here, got rid of everybody. So he doesn't know, like, I can't finish my contracts. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, so now they're doing, you know, carve outs, and I was hoping they would do a carve out for the toy. I think we talked about that last time that we could kind of ride behind them, but Mattel got in a fight with them. But yeah, they're going to do, he's trying to put up a carve out for hotels and hospitality, but it's where they're going to be these, they're not going to have a path to citizenship. They're not going to be resident aliens. They're going to have to be a new thing where they're vouched for by their employer. They're going to be indentured servants.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're not going to have any rights.
Which is scary.
They can be more easily exploited, but then they can also stay in the country legally. So it's like, but we're still the good guys, man.
Yeah.
So anyway, I, you know, all my art is about like, just, you know, take another perspective and look and see things from another way, you know?
Have you in all these years of producing, I mean, you did so well in how you took on iconography that was well known with billboard stuff and you started doing that in toys. But toys now are produced and they're in houses and companies can get up in arms. Have you ever received a cease and desist from a company?
I think the first one I got was from Disney, but
was that for the Skull Mickey?
No, it was way before all this culture. I think they did a book of famous artists doing Mickey Mouse, and I had never done Mickey Mouse at that point. And I think that's what made me do Mickey Mouse. I did want to be in the book, and then they rejected it from the book because it seemed like that it was like a young couple and they're driving, and Mickey's throwing Pluto a bone, and they thought it implied that the young couple like were either just had sex or were going to have sex, and so they kicked me out of the book, and then that's when I started fucking with Disney, and then I don't know. They sued me, but I got the volunteer lawyers through the arts, which is a thing you can do in New York. And you can get like the best lawyers, and you know, I actually wasn't doing anything wrong. I've never done anything wrong. It's just you can get sued.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean,
it's better if at that point I couldn't have fought a lawsuit on my own. So they could.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can outlast people, you'll be fine. You know, you just have to have backing. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, you fall in line with, there's an artist named Dan O'Neill who did Mickey and the Air Pirates. And that seems like your vibe of art as well, that it was like, oh, you don't want me in the book. Fine. Let's see what I can do with Mickey.
Yeah. He's a weird dude.
he is. He was on the podcast.
Was he?
Yeah, he is. He's really old and rambles about a lot of stuff that's tough.
I was the editor for one. I was the guest editor.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters. Now sponsors Toys on Tap. That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10. Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
For Juxtapose. They were doing a political issue, and I desperately tried to get him, you know, and I called his friends and I got him on the phone. He goes, yeah, just read my book or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get him to talk to me. Yeah. Well, so you got him.
Yeah. He came on and I've read through his comics and I heard the story of him fighting Disney, and it's such an outlandish story because though it's an awesome win for art, it's not going to be a win that we all get to participate in. They're going to come after each and every one of us if they could.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he was cool.
Well, not for Mickey now.
Yeah.
Gotta make him a little old school. But yeah, I think he really got, I think it hurt him bad. And the kids, it was a really huge fight. I always felt weirdly guilty because, well, the guy that made the movie about me, you know, Constant, he's also the guy that anyway, whatever, lost all his employees, dies. But his brother spent like a year in prison for doing the same shit I did. And I've been in jail a lot. And they've, you know, I've come close, but I've always got away and I've always beat the lawsuits. And so I always just thought I seemed very lucky. And probably, you know, sometimes the reason that I'm lucky is because of Dan. So he took the hard hit. And then it got softer by the time they hit me, or
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, he did. His story is pretty intense with legal stuff and all that, and it set a cool precedent for the rest of us. But we had to have someone that got set on fire before we realized what we could get away with and stuff. And so now I think companies are more willing to send you a letter that says pull back or we're coming after you.
Well, I'm spacing out here. Who was the guy that got sued by Mattel for doing Barbie in a blender and all that?
There is a company or a...
I know his name really well, and because I've talked about him a lot. Now I can't seem to remember.
I don't know who that one is. I know that Mattel has gone after the Barbie Liberation Organization a lot because they did the culture jamming of the G.I. Joe and the Barbie, the Teen Talk Barbie swap and re-giving to stores. And they just recently did one a year or two ago And so Mattel is not stoked on them, but it could be the same people.
No, it was one guy. God bless them. I'm really, they got me on a bunch of drugs. So I think maybe
here, let me look it up while you're talking real quick.
But yeah, he only showed it at CBGB's gallery, which is, you know, I mean, it's not a huge thing. Evidently, Mattel was buying all of his art. It was like photographs of Barbie and, you know, scenes that normally you wouldn't see Barbie in. And he couldn't afford a lawyer, you know, like me back in the day. And he got the volunteer lawyers for the arts. And they won the case. They said, well, no reasonable person. They argued no reasonable person, which is actually the spirit of the law, would think that Mattel put Barbie in a blender. So any reasonable person, and we're not going to worry about crazy people. You know, we have to kind of not let them be a part of the system. But
Tom Forsyth.
Yes, Tom. Yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody. But anyway, he won the lawsuit, or his, you know, voluntary lawyers won the lawsuit, and he got like a huge settlement because they thought it was a harassment or whatever. And but his lawyers got to keep all the money, because also if you use the volunteer lawyers, they if you don't put up your own money for the defense, if he would have done that, then he would have won some money. But the lawyers got all the money. So first they do it free, they get paid if they get a settlement, because they I think they kicked him back like $1 billion something,
still a large amount of money.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when people make art, they don't think, I don't know. I mean, I guess you imagine yourself as an artist when you're young, and probably getting arrested isn't part of like your imagining what an artist is, and probably getting lawsuits and losing your house over some piece of art you made that's probably not part of your thought process going into the profession.
Yeah, it definitely is not something I want to partake in. As you have done this, we come upon a toy that is one of my favorites that you've made. It is the grenade dinosaur slammed together. I've wanted to ask you questions about that piece and what your take was on it, because I've seen different editions come out and stuff. So tell me about the grenade dinosaur piece.
Well, I was kind of thinking about, you know, evolution.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like how we have consciousness of evolution, and we see, you know, things in the fossil records as, oh, yeah, that's us. That was us on our way to being human. And so I think that back then I was just thinking at some point that the machines are going to gain consciousness, and that they're going to have their own ancestors. And some of these very crude machines, they will consider like their ancestors, you know?
Yeah.
Be the mammals running between the dinosaurs, you know, that they're not big enough or bad enough yet to take over, or be conscious enough to take over, as most animals aren't as conscious as we are. So sometimes that's why we are so easily able to exploit them, because they can't think as deeply or as, you know, globally as we can. And the computers will think way better than us, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's an ancestor. That's like an old. So I just kind of play with that idea. And the little funny aside about that character is it's banned from being on airplanes.
Oh, because of its look?
The TSA has a picture of it that says you can't. Because it started with one of our cousins. We gave him one, and or nephews, and he took it home, and they took it away from him. And then it happened to some other people. And so
how funny.
Get on a plane.
That's crazy. You are just famous in every industry, it seems, about what you can and can't do.
Oh, infamous, but yeah.
When you look over your time making toys, and I guess what's to come, and in the reality of you saying that you kind of have to reinvent yourself, what's that looking like going forward? Like how are you starting to take this on and starting to look towards new ideas and what to produce?
Huh. I don't know. I think, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm going to China or to Hong Kong in a couple of weeks. So I'll be there and I'll see everybody and I'll meet with everybody. And, you know, we've already got offers from other companies, and you know, some, I don't know. So a lot of people are trying to make deals right now. So anyway, I'll just think, I'll see what's out there and what's going on, and I'll figure out what, and I don't have to do anything next, but you know, I think I'd like to, but I'm old enough that all my friends are retired. So it's, if I did decide to retire, it wouldn't be like weird.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think artists ever retire. It's too much fun.
If you retire, what are you going to do with your time?
Right. I mean, I'm having the time of my life, and I've got to have this role for 40 some years. Like, why would I stop it? Just because, like, one of my friends was like, how do you never get off the road. You just keep going. And like, don't you ever get tired? It's like, dude, it took me so long to build this machine. I want to run the machine as long as I can, you know?
Yeah. But that is interesting.
But yes, we're looking into how would we, you know, make stuff here for real. So yeah. But you know, it's somebody just beginning is going to have to. This is going to be the environment that they begin their career in. They're going to have to figure it out the same as I am.
Yeah,
I'm not really in a different boat. Well, I mean a little bit, but you know, it's still it's your whole life is trying to figure stuff out. Every time you learn this, then something else comes along. And I think it's crazier now because things change faster now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have to deal with AI. We're going to have to deal with a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking what is interesting about AI, toys seems like it's going to be one of the only industries that's going to be really hard to have AI. Because you can have the AI image, but once we produce the toy, you now have something in your hand.
Oh, you still have something physical. But I play around with AI a lot. Like, right, one weird thing has been driving me nuts, but I finally got it to do it. But I can't make it to make the grin. Like, okay, I can't make Ronnie Rabbit, and I can't make the grin because it's just combing all this shit, and that ain't part of it, you know? So it's just, it's a newer thing. So you know that this is more original because they can't fucking do it.
Yeah.
Some of my other characters is just like, oh, you stick a horn on a pig and then you got a unit pig. And so that it can do, but it can't do that because it doesn't know what the fuck it is, you know, which means it's an original idea. But so I've been trying to figure out how to make it do that to help me do that. But I don't know. I forgot what we're talking about.
My hope when looking, I think the last, because we were talking about trying to like reinvent and what that's going to look like. And I think
I was just saying, and I was playing around to say, you know, so I took a character to give me turnarounds and it did. It didn't be very good turnarounds. Like a couple were good and then gave one a third leg. But it's like, okay, that's a Rubicon. It just crossed the Rubicon. It just did something it couldn't do 3 weeks ago, you know?
Yeah, I am. I will say this, there are helpful parts to AI, because I don't want to write it off entirely. I do want to say there are helpful parts to like packaging mock-up. Here's the designs. Can you throw this on a package for me to see what it would look like? Here's the designs. Can you give me a glimpse of what type of box I'll need for this toy? And right. So that kind of stuff is really helpful. I have seen what it can do when you like type in a good prompt and show me this in the style of a Safubi toy or whatever. And it doesn't know what Safubi is. Like the AI, it does, but it doesn't. And so it'll design something that can never happen.
Right.
And so, AI is really interesting. I think the scarier one is there's now pictures or there's now a company that you can put in an image and it'll break it down into the 3D sculpt for you.
Wow.
And that one is a little scary because
what's that one?
I can't remember exactly. I'll shoot you a message. I can't remember what it's called. I took a screenshot because it was so shocking to see, because the image that it was using in the ad was really accurate. And I can't imagine it's that accurate.
Well, how I make like the music is, you know, like you write the song, I write the song, and then I kind of know all the parts I want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll get the people that can actually play and do, you know, what I ask them to do. And then you kind of get the song that way, or you can kind of relax a little bit and say, you know, let's see what ideas you have for the lead guitar or whatever. And, you know, So different people can contribute, or I can conceptualize the whole thing, and then the players can do the whole thing. So I mean, there's kind of a spectrum of ways that I could do it. But you know, I in a year I'll be able to hum into my computer, and then it'll like, this is the sax part, and I can hum it.
Yeah,
create the sax part. You know, right now I think it just comes like other people and steals or whatever. But
yeah. Do you find?
I don't think that you're gonna the whole world's gonna be littered with albums that just made by some kid in his basement that sounds like U2. Or
did you know? You see recently that they found a Spotify artist that is AI?
I thought there was a whole lot of I watched that on TV this morning, and I just thought, oh, that's weird. I thought there were already 100 on there, because when I listened to Spotify, it's like, I think, okay, that's not a real person. I mean, I think I can tell, you know, but maybe I'm crazy. Maybe just people sort of sound like that now. I don't know.
Yeah, that is tough.
What a weird thing to, you know, to think about if you're a musician, because I don't know. I mean, if you have gigs, then I don't know. Okay, but, you know, here's weird, because if you would have told me, like, you know, in the 70s, it's like, well, you know, people are just going to get up and play records.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. Somebody's going to get up there and just play records, and that and they're going to fill a stadium.
Yeah,
you see somebody going to a dance party and playing records. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. But you know, if I'm going to a stadium and paying huge money, I want to see fucking Led Zeppelin. I don't want to see somebody playing a Led Zeppelin record.
Right.
I was wrong. You know. Now it's huge. You know. So I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It is shocking to see what's coming.
I think all the musicians will use it. But yeah, so it's, if you ask me what I'm going to do next, it's hard to know, because it's like everything is really changing.
Like, do you think
we had like minor changes that were kind of earth shattering? And I guess the computer was earth shattering. So I guess we've lived through earth shattering changes. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's really wild right now. Like, it's getting really.
Yeah. Do you think that toys, as the years go on and you start to move slowly towards retirement, do you think that toys will be one of the few things that you give up first and you keep painting?
I doubt if I'll give up anything.
You should keep going.
I think you can have a different mindset. You can say, well, you know, I think he's slowly retired. I mean, retirement is just like, yeah, I don't want to do that gig. I'm not interested, you know? Yeah. Then appeal to me. You get to say the word no, but you still get to say the word yes too, you know.
Yeah,
it just gets to be, you get to own yes.
I mean, next week we kind of dive into what it looks like for your legacy, because you have been around for so long and have been such a pivotal part in pop culture and in art making, and kind of, as Dan might have paved a way for you and doing that kind of stuff, you have paved a way for so many of us as artists to kind of really figure out what we're going to do and play with ideas and all that stuff. And so I'm excited to start going on there.
Yeah. And you know, not to be anybody's lawyer, but nothing's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Because we do small runs of stuff, and actually the, I don't know what the laws are like, but the law here in New York City is you can make up to 200 of something, and it's still considered unique. There's a lot of protections now. So, and also they're just going to say cease and desist.
Yeah.
And you can write them, lawyer, and we send them back a letter, and still I would not use my advice. I would use an actual lawyer's advice, but we send a lawyer, and we cite 20 other situations where this has went to court, and the plaintiff, you know, the plaintiff or whatever is won. And so we're completely in our rights. We just demonstrated it's a registered letter, so they signed, so that means they've had it. If they go in front of a judge, they're like, this is fair use.
Yeah.
It's changed 60%, or it's a parody, or it's too limited of an edition. You know, and if you want to fight it, you keep going. If you think, I just don't want to deal with this, everything you've distributed is gone. They don't mess with that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they say you have to stop producing. Whatever's distributed, it's out there. So you just say, you can say, you can write them back and say, I'm done. I'm not mm-hmm. doing this. I agree not to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Say, I'm completely within my rights. Let's go to court. But either way, if you send them back the I'm completely within my rights, more than likely they're not going to go to court with you because they know they're going to lose. They want to drain you of money. They want you to drop out. Mm-hmm. Like Jesus says, look, I sue everybody. My guy just, well, he doesn't sue everybody. He sends everybody a cease and desist. And he goes, it's just everybody. It's like, I literally have them send cease and desist to people who put makeup on. Some man puts a makeup on, cease and desist. How the fuck can I tell them not to wear makeup? I
mean,
it's makeup. But he goes, you know what? They chicken out. They stop.
Yeah.
And what? So I don't have any other makeup bands out there competing with me. So, but no, nobody could beat them. So anyway, you're not going to get in any trouble if they send you a cease and desist and you're just really, you know, want to avoid trouble and that's not what you're looking for, then you just, you send them a letter saying, yes, I don't agree, but I'm going to cease and desist. And,
yeah.
And they won't come after what you've already sent, and whatever you made will be worth more a bit because it's got the little, oh my God, he never did the second colorway because that was super rare. And that's what our little thing's all about. But, yeah, so I wouldn't worry about that stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Ron, it's been good to have you on again for your fourth episode.
I saw how long I took saying that because that's what a lawyer does.